Welcome to the Latchkey Tales, Book 1, Yuki O'Malley and the Belfair, a tale of Victorian horror, written and performed for podcast by M.J. Hahn. Chapter 1, Too Bad for Tina. December 9th, 1984. Deep in the Richmond district, the city was beginning to disappear into the wall of fog that drifted in from Ocean Beach. At 9:45 on a Sunday night in this particular corner of San Francisco, the city was already buttoned up and tucked in bed. You could say that the only major activity on the street was the changing of the signal lights. It was actually quiet enough to hear their subtle clunk as they changed. Tina Bleiberman sat on the front steps of the Oddfellows Teen Adjustment Center, untangling the headphone cord to her Walkman. Tina was your textbook blue-haired 16-year-old delinquent and the leader of the Holy Terrors, a gang consisting of four of the toughest girls at Oddfellows. Thus far, Tina's adjustment, at least where the authorities were concerned, had been less than satisfactory. Granted, her life had not been an easy one. Tina had no family to speak of. Technically, she was a ward of the state. That meant that as far back as she could remember, she had been bounced between foster homes and various facilities, and those, shall we say, hadn't exactly worked out. Eventually, a number of counts of shoplifting, loitering, and one trumped-up charge of arson had landed Tina at Oddfellows. It was to be her last chance of last chances to get herself together, or she would end up at the mercy of the California Youth Authority, and God only knows what would happen to her after that. Tina sat there looking up at the sky, struggling to see the stars through the blanket of thickening fog. She scoffed.
It's a city. There's never any stars.
Tina kicked the heels of her steel-toed boots against the stone steps, a little unsure about the evening's big upcoming event. Her best friend Sloane's words were still ringing in her ears, standing there with her best Billy Idol sneer while she told Tina that she was crazy. But then, crazy wasn't exactly out of the ordinary where Oddfellows was concerned. The OTAC was one of those creepy buildings you could still find dotted around the city, the kind that seemed like they had been around forever. It was old and creaky, as was its director and notorious head honcho, Mr. Silas Filgrave. Filgrave ran a tight ship, and had been around long enough to know all the angles. You had to be a real connoisseur of mayhem to get anything over an old Filgrave, a quality that Tina could almost respect. In fact, she thought Mr. Filgrave could actually be cool in a strange Edgar Allan Poe sort of way, if only he didn't spend his time acting like such a total a-hole. Life, if you could call it that, under the roof of Oddfellows, practically amounted to slavery. Filgrave had been up to something lately that was occupying all his time and keeping him away from the center. As a result, he had devised an entirely new routine, which was enforced by the horrible floor matrons. Oddfellows' young residents were now required to work day and night in shifts. They were cooped up in the dank attic and forced to do all sorts of mind-numbing tasks, the worst being printing heinous t-shirts for the tourists down at Fisherman's Wharf. Let me tell you, having to look at, "I went to SF and all I got was crabs," over and over again is a very specific sort of torture. So, naturally, to relieve the stress, Tina would unwind by indulging in her favorite pastime, instigating mass chaos as explosively as possible. Tina's most recent exploit had involved the Holy Terrors siphoning the gas out of every car in the center's garage. Their ingenuity was later frowned upon when the cops noticed all the commotion and eventually broke up their little street sale on Geary Boulevard. Oh, yeah, and then there was Tina's little knife incident.
Concealed weapon? Whatever. That blade was totally street legal.
Needless to say, Mr. Filgrave's response had been severe. Since then, Tina and the other Holy Terrors had spent the past few months keeping a low profile, and the routine around Oddfellows resumed its relatively uneventful course. Except for the day when Mr. Filgrave had arrived out of the blue and asked them all, very sweetly, if they were interested in doing him a favor. Tina found herself oddly compelled to say yes just to see what he wanted. The other Holy Terrors followed suit out of habit, except for Sloane, who had instant misgivings about anything to do with Philgrave, especially when he was smiling that widely. But even she eventually relented when Philgrave said that helping him would guarantee their chances of getting out of the center for good. Apparently, Oddfellows was launching a new program called Fresh Start Makeovers, and the Holy Terrors were all slated to be the first participants. All Philgrave would reveal was that it involved something about getting career-friendly hairdos. Even though the name alone made Tina cringe, the idea of getting away from Oddfellows once and for all for just enduring some stupid haircut proved too good to pass up. And when Tina had finally agreed, Philgrave made sure her name was on the top of his list. Tina could count on one hand the times that anything good had happened to her in her messed up life, but this time, for once, she dared to hope that this crazy deal of Philgrave's was as good as it sounded. The large black Mercedes rolled up, purring like a jungle cat. Behind the wheel sat Silas Philgrave. Ancient, thin, and frail, he motioned imperiously with a skeletal hand for Tina to get in. She slid into the enormous back seat and marveled at Mr. Philgrave's taste in cars. Tina felt like a rock star as she settled in. The car lurched forward, the doors locking automatically as they disappeared into the night. They seemed to glide through the drifting fog as they turned onto Geary Boulevard, heading towards downtown. Tina sighed upon noting that the boulevard was completely deserted. She stared out of the window as the empty sidewalk streamed by. She had always felt marooned in this part of town, so far away from anything remotely cool. Mr. Philgrave was muttering to himself while he checked the rearview mirror every few minutes. He wore dark glasses and had the collar of his overcoat turned up as if he was trying to look inconspicuous. He kept raking his thin fingers through his wispy hair, which held the ghostly outline of a once mighty pompadour.
Mr. Philgrave? Is everything okay?
Tina raised an eyebrow at the cloak and dagger outfit. Mr. Philgrave seemed quite oblivious to Tina's question, and continued to grumble and drive. Tina was used to this sort of thing from adults, especially the really old ones. So she rummaged through her bag until she found her Walkman. She plugged in her headphones, made sure the volume was all the way up, and then proceeded to blast the new cassette single of her favorite group of all time, Teenage Knife Fight. Tina sat back in cacophonous bliss and began to flip through the new copy of Extreme Hairstyles for 1985, which Sloane had given her as a joke. Tina's expression darkened as she glared down at the inane models and their not-so-extreme hair. Certainly, none of these hair don'ts even came close to matching Tina's crowning glory. A thick mane of tall spikes, which she had just gotten to the perfect shade of blue. Yeah, maybe she hadn't completely thought out exactly what this career-friendly thing was going to entail. She flipped violently past spiky and sassy, as well as long and lovely. She skipped over rockin' lady and downtown fancy. But when she came to pretty and punky, she could take no more. Tina closed the magazine with a shudder, rolled it up, and began tapping her knee in time with the music while she grumbled to herself. If these jokers tried to make her pretty and punky, she was gonna bust some skulls. Finally, after what seemed like hours, the Mercedes emerged out of the avenues. The car smoothly slid its way downhill towards the Tenderloin, where Geary gives way to O'Farrell Street. This was Tina's old stomping ground, at least when she was on one of her unexcused furloughs from state custody. She glanced nostalgically at the groups of punky boys loitering on the street corners and sighed to herself.
Now, no more of that for you, Miss Bleeberman.
Philgrave's eyes met Tina's over his dark glasses in the rearview mirror.
Mr. DeVinter has got something miraculous planned for you, I'm sure.
Philgrave's lips curled into something like a smile.
Miraculous indeed.
His words were drowned out by screeching guitars as Tina replaced her headphones. The Mercedes slowed at the corner of Taylor Street, trying to make a left turn.
Oh, come on, you idiots!
Standing in the middle of the intersection, some inebriated tourists were taking group photos. Philgrave began hitting the car horn repeatedly with his bony hand.
Oh, come on, come on!
He spat at them while continuing his relentless improvisation with the car horn. Eventually, the group of people realized that they were perched in the center of traffic and scattered, smiling and waving their giant foam fingers printed with SF is number one. Mr. Philgrave continued to bristle for several blocks while they traveled up Taylor Street. Apparently, that small delay had thrown their timing off, as now they encountered red light after red light.
Oh, confound it. I'll never hear the end of this.
Philgrave checked his watch and tightened his grip on the wheel, making the veins on his hands bulge unpleasantly. Slowly but surely, they made their way up the hill, past hotels and theaters, past Grace Cathedral, into an area made up of giant homes and elegant apartment buildings. From the back seat, Tina let out an audible sigh and grumbled, Snob Hill. This part of the city definitely was not her turf. It was full of rich yuppies and their spoiled kids who all went to private schools. It gave Tina hives just thinking about it. She glowered as the multi-million-dollar residences continued to stream by. The Mercedes arrived at the corner of Broadway, which caused Philgrave to suddenly perk up.
Ugh, finally.
Tina looked up out of her window while the car made a slow left turn. Their destination came into view. The enormous Victorian mansion towering overhead, sitting high above the street on its fortress-like foundation. It seemed to be nestled comfortably on the steep, tree-covered hillside like some defiant relic from the past. 3 stories of ornately framed windows and as much ostentatious molding as the structure would allow. High above the roofline, comprised of many gables, were 4 pointy towers, one on each corner of the house, standing black against the night sky. Tina gasped at the sight of them.
Freak show!
Tina turned off her Walkman when she noticed Mr. Philgrave looking at her again over his sunglasses. There was an unpleasant twinkle in his bloodshot eyes as he slowed the car into the short driveway, where they were greeted by a tall black iron gate and a tiny red call box.
Now, Miss Bleeberman.
Philgrave leered as he stopped the car and rolled his window down.
You're in for a treat.
Tina strained her neck, trying to look for anything that resembled a hair salon. Every single window was dark. It really looked like no one was home. Philgrave leaned out to push a button on the call box. There was a staticky pop and then a squelchy voice.
Philgrave, you're late. Do you have our model?
Yes, of course.
Philgrave answered somewhat testily. The gate immediately swung inward and Mr. Philgrave drove down a dark tunnel. Tina could read the discreet brass plaque on the gate as they passed. The Belfair. By appointment only. Established 1942. The tunnel descended for a short distance and opened out into a large underground parking area. The Mercedes slowed to a prowl while light poured from a doorway flanked by columns. A red carpet led down a small staircase to where the Mercedes finally stopped. At the top of the stairs stood a man and a woman in black, their narrow silhouettes stark against the glowing doorway. The woman wore a stern expression on her seemingly lovely face. Her long blonde hair cascaded over her shoulders in gentle waves. She wrapped her black shawl close to her and whispered in the man's ear once she got a glimpse of Tina. The man chuckled in Tina's direction and smoothed his silver hair back. First impressions considered, Tina certainly had nothing nice to say about the pair. She hated the woman instantly.
Ugh, Miss 80s hippie disco puke.
And standing next to her was this other joker, looking like some kind of poser David Bowie. The silver hair almost worked, but he was certainly way too tan to be trusted.
Like some sort of new wave game show host.
Mr. Philgrave unlocked the doors as the tan man approached with a toothy smile. He opened Tina's door and offered a hand to help her out.
Well, good evening, Miss Bleeberman. I am Mr. DeVinter, and this is my collaborator, Madame Lamolle.
The blonde woman blinked several times before managing a smile.
Welcome to the Belfair.
Tina got out of the car, clutching her backpack and her magazine. A strange feeling came over her. Something about these two didn't seem right.
Please, do come in. We should begin as soon as possible. We have a lot planned for you, my dear.
Mr. DeVinter bowed slightly and made a flourish with his hand. Reluctantly, Tina began to climb the stairs, and then she looked back at the Mercedes. Mr. Philgrave had on a wide smile that showed every single vintage tooth. Suddenly, Tina understood what Sloane meant about seeing Philgrave that happy about anything. Madame Lamolle rested her hands lightly on Tina's shoulders. Her touch sent shivers down Tina's spine. Her hands were so cold. Tina did admire how pale the lady's hands were, but as she looked closer, her shiver intensified into the full-blown creeps. Yeah, Miss Disco Hippie Puke was pale all right, but maybe a little too pale. And her eyes, such an unusual shade of gold, like a panther's, the way their gaze held her. Tina found herself feeling completely relaxed, so at ease that she could barely register Mr. Philgrave's voice coming from the open car door.
Shall I come by later then?
No.
Mr. Derventer smiled. His sterling eyes sparkled as Tina disappeared through the glowing doorway.
Stick around, Silas. I expect results very soon.
And so, Chapter 1 comes to a close. I'd like to thank guest voices on this episode, Lisa Snare as Tina. Music on the program provided by Incomptech.com and Freesound.org. For more information, you can check out LatchkeyTales.com or the Latchkey Tales fan page on Facebook. And if you have a mind to, you can leave a nice 5-star comment on iTunes. So, please stay tuned for Chapter 2. And until then, this is MJ Hahn saying goodbye for now, and thanks for listening.
To do it. Oh, pulled back a whole bunch. Paul Lynn is the voice I hear in my head.